This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, happy day, 2:07 on a Friday, and we are happy to be with you. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. The news continues to soldier on. I've been kind of paying attention to the CEO murder United Healthcare thing. More interested in that than I am usually in these kind of crime stories that materialize. How weird is it? You know, we were talking the other day. I don't know if we did it as much on the air, off the air. We were talking about the fact that he shot him in the leg first.
Mm-hmm.
And we were discussing whether or not that made him a better shooter or a worse shooter. But the shell casings had words on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He had to fire three shots. Minimum.
Because each one had other different words? Or?
Yeah, or one of the shell casings was the one that he cleared.
But I mean, either way... they said he cleared it because what I was reading was that the gun had to be re-racked time to fire
a
shot.
Yeah.
But he was so close, he could have just gone up and shot the guy in the head. But he left, there were shell casings behind that had words written on them.
And I guess each one had different words is what I'm understanding, right?
Like three,
that's
three words.
That's what I just said.
So each, okay. So
yeah.
Okay. So
defend,
he was trying to
deny,
get a message.
Depose.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like a play on words from some book or something. But like the implication here is that this has something to do with the insurance industry. Certainly, that you would expect that this guy who was murdered right there on the outside of his hotel, that it was about his position as in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
It just the story seems weird to me. I mean. It's to me, it's like they thought the plot out so much that they needed to have all these details at the beginning of this episode so that you'd stay to figure out what happens in 60 minutes. And this is real life. This is a real murder that took place in broad daylight in New York City. Now, the latest news on this is that the Atlanta Police Department said New York City authorities have contacted the agency, will provide assistance as needed in the probe of the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The masked gunman wanted for stalking and killing Thompson traveled on a Greyhound bus last month from Atlanta to New York by bus. Seems like you said that already, Fox News. Law enforcement sources told Fox News the shooter boarded a bus in Atlanta the day before Thanksgiving. Sources within the New York Police Department said Brian Thompson was gunned down by the suspect before 7 a.m. Wednesday outside the Hilton in Midtown Manhattan. The APD said it was contacted by the New York Police Department on Friday as the manhunt for the gunman continues. Is it amazing how much you can learn about a single individual who's taking measures and precautions to cover their tracks to some extent, obviously?
Yeah, and the other thing that the reason I was asking about the casings is because obviously there was premeditation here. So how did this guy know that much about the CEO, where he was going to be, what hotel he was at, when he was going to come out? Maybe he didn't know when he was going to come out and he was just sitting there. We don't know. But there's so much that you're asking, and you would have to be asking as an investigator, how did he know all this? Was somebody giving him this information? And then you start to try to find out who around the CEO had the information of where he would be at any given time to give that info.
Fox News also reports that the UnitedHealthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, and his wife, which we've heard about, his wife is two high school aged boys, were living separately at the time. Another wrinkle there.
Okay.
If you're doing like a murder for hire thing, is that how are you doing it before 7 a.m. in daylight in the middle of New York City?
Maybe you got to take what you are offered. You know, if you know that's the one spot you know where he's going to be, maybe that's what you got to do if you're the hitman.
My understanding was that this conference, this healthcare conference that he was at, started on Monday. And what day did we have Harris Faulkner on? Wednesday?
Wednesday, yeah.
So the shooting was on Wednesday. So if this guy was in New York City before that day, which it appears as though he was because he came from Atlanta, Thanksgiving week, if the shooter was in the area, he could have been watching him for days before he, you know, probably you could watch what his habits are, when does he leave the hotel, where does he go when he leaves the hotel. You could kind of pay attention to him for a while. So, because initially there were people asking, like, well, how did he know he was going to be at this? Because there are multiple hotels that people at this convention were staying at. You can look up any convention and see what hotels are recommended. So you can you could presume that there would be this hotel or that hotel, but you could spend the days leading up to this and watch him and know where he was going to be and have an idea of when he'd be coming out. But the thing that really pushes it to the forefront of national interest is that clearly the shooter wanted to send a message. Writing words, like when you're watching CSI New York and they're like, we found casings at the site of the crime and they had words written on them. You're like, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the words correspond. Like I even read the Fox News report yesterday of the guy who was like, listen, in the movies, people hire hitman to take out people to do jobs, whatever. It's not really realistic. It doesn't happen the way it's portrayed in your nightly crime shows or movies or whatever. It doesn't happen that way in real life, realistically, very often.
And you know what? That's good to know.
Yes.
Glad to hear that.
But then they're like, they had denied, defend, oppose, or whatever on the bullet casings. Excuse me, what?
Well, I wonder if they say, look, it doesn't happen like that in the movies where you go talk to somebody in a seedy joint somewhere and you go, I'm looking to off my friend's husband or whatever. But if that's not that common, like if you don't have just hitmen, because I would think if you're a hitman and it's getting out that you're a hitman so you can get business, it's also going to get to the people who would arrest the hitman pretty easily. So I can see how you wouldn't have a lot of these people. But are they suggesting by releasing that information that this guy was acting of his own accord? Like he wasn't hired. Like he was the one with the grievance.
Scoot says on YouTube, there are a bazillion cameras in Manhattan, none in Central Park. That's the part that's telling. I didn't know there were no cameras in Central Park.
Do now.
Why?
It seems like you would have them there. That seems like where you'd have them more.
Fox News reports the man suspected of killing UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson was captured on video surveillance leaving Central Park without his backpack, a law enforcement official told the New York Times. The suspected gunman was seen wearing a backpack during a shooting outside a hotel in Manhattan's Midtown neighborhood early Wednesday. Following the attack, the suspect walked between two vehicles, got onto a bike, disappeared into Central Park. So he went into Central Park with a backpack. He went out without one. I mean, the backpack doesn't vaporize. Central Park go up against water?
I don't think so.
No. I think it's in the middle of the city.
Is it Battery Park that goes up? I can't remember. I've been there one time, and it's just so massive and tall. They always say, like, when you're there, don't look up at the buildings. It shows that you're a tourist. And I'm like, what do you do? Like, okay, I'm looking down. Oh my gosh, I almost did it. Yeah. Keep your eye on my eyes here. One of the things that I learned when I was in New York City after going through the 9/11 memorial, amazing. If you ever go, make the time, top priority list to make sure you get it done before you leave New York City to go through the tour at the 9/11 memorial. But I didn't realize this, that the rubble and the wreckage from the towers and everything coming down was so massive that they just dumped it into the Hudson and made Manhattan bigger.
I didn't know that either.
Mm-hmm. And they put a park on it right now. So you can, Manhattan, they tore our buildings down and we said, we'll make Manhattan bigger. I think that's kind of a poetic, sad, tragic, poetic way
They made a park where they dumped the rubble, or they made a park where the Twin Towers were?
They had to shovel. I mean, the towers are very close to the Hudson. And I think I'm saying that right. And all of the rubble, they couldn't ship it all out. Mm-hmm. Like it would have been able to happen. So they put it into the Hudson, annexed Manhattan. Like they just changed the way the area shaped, and it's a really nice new place is a really nice park out there, and that's I did not of all of the things that you know and learn. If you're a New Yorker, you're going to know that.
Yeah.
Because it's so epicenter, it's so personal. But I didn't learn that until I went there. I think sometimes I get frustrated if something happens in New York and it's like a big deal because it happens in one of the big cities. It happens where it matters. And then here in St. Louis, if something like this happens, it's like, because the people who are making the new shows are more close to the danger, mm-hmm. than we all hear about it more. So I'm always a little apprehensive to dive headfirst on the stories like this that come out, but
yeah, it's like when the Yankees win the World Series. It's a bigger deal.
It's just a bigger deal.
That guy lit the Christmas tree in Times Square on fire recently, it was always a huge story.
Well, that was
story.
Last year, and it was Fox's tree.
Oh, that's
that
right. That's why
that
we heard about that
Fox
much.
News tree.
But that's really a good example of this, though, because Fox covered that like crazy.
Yeah.
If it was in St. Louis, same size, homeless person sets a tree on fire, you're not going to hear about it.
You kind of understand, though, if you kind of get it. And you wonder, is that like a hate crime?
Yeah.
But that was last year. The other news story that's coming out of New York City that I think has really not gotten the attention on the whole that it deserves, but the timeline of the story has really followed, been parallel to the election. So, of course, it gets dwarfed because of that, is the story of Daniel Penny. Fox News reports jurors on the Daniel Penny chokehold trial returned to deliberations for a fourth day today for just an hour before telling the court they could not come to an agreement on the top charge, manslaughter, as they weigh the fate of a 26-year-old Marine veteran and architecture student accused of killing a mentally ill homeless man who threatened to kill people in a Manhattan subway car. Around 11 a.m. Today, the juror sent a note to the court saying, "We, the jury, request instructions from Judge Maxwell Wiley. At this time, we are unable to come to a unanimous vote on count one, manslaughter in the second degree." This is the top charge that he is facing. The charge requires prosecutors to prove that Penny acted with recklessness when he grabbed Jordan Neely in a chokehold. Neely had barged onto the train while high on drugs, threatening to kill passengers during a psychotic episode, according to trial testimony. Gosh, why is this difficult?
I don't know. This is why everybody, including myself, are so mad about this stupid case. Stupid New York, Alvin Bragg, what a joke.
When we're talking about Penny and whether or not he should be found guilty for manslaughter, I am at the same time asking myself, shouldn't we be calling Daniel Penny a hero?
Yes.
Like, it's not just like, did he kill him because he was reckless or not? It's like, this guy is a hero. You want a Daniel Penny around your kiddo when they're living their dreams in New York City. You want a Daniel Penny on every subway car because the law and order of New York City has been deprioritized by the yahoos that are running that local government. When I think about the people who I know personally who have served, who have a, would you say, certain set of skills, I don't, what if this guy would have injured, if not killed, which he was threatening to do, somebody on that subway car, and Daniel Penny, whose name we would never ever know, whose face we would never ever have seen, sat in that car, was another idle observer of this situation happening. Nobody would know it, but he'd spend the rest of his life thinking, I could have done something.
That's what's so evil about this and this Alvin Bragg guy. They're trying to send a message to people, do not protect others. We will come after you if you try to protect others and you have a hair that falls in the wrong spot, we're coming after you.
Well, it's not even just that. We're here to defend the criminals is what we're doing. That man was not having a good episode. I get that. But he would have attacked anybody that, like, you know, tell me about the social worker. You're not going to send a social worker into a situation where there's somebody who's manic saying that they're going to kill people. He was just there, and he's like, this guy is not stable. I'm going to restrain him. And he restrained him. He did what a hero does. And now, because the city of Manhattan has turned criminals into victims,
Daniel Penny, the hero, is now on trial. This is ridiculous.
More Fox News reporting says Wiley said, that's a judge, he would give the jurors, quote, Allen charge instructions after giving the attorneys time to review. Allen charges refer to jury instructions given to a hung jury, urging them to agree on a verdict. They have a controversial history, with critics warning they can push jurors to change their views under peer pressure. They get their name from an 1896 Supreme Court decision in Allen v. United States. Penny's defense is asking for a mistrial to be declared, but the judge said he would give jurors more time and read them those Allen charge instructions. He told the jurors their vote must be unanimous, and if they cannot reach a unanimous verdict on the top charge, a new trial will have to be set with a new jury. It makes me want to cuss. It makes me so mad.
This is the epitome of everything that is wrong with the Democrat Party. Their priorities are so out of whack. And if we were dealing with an election that had gone the other way right now, I think we'd all be afraid that this, what we're watching happen in New York right now, is going to be what the entire nation is like. We don't, thank God. But this is such an example, because it's still going on, of what could have been for this country.
And the prosecution is local. It's not a federal charge, correct?
Correct. It's Alvin Bragg, so it's Manhattan.
Donald Trump can't go on January 20th and pardon him, because they're not his. This is the same problem that he has with his own his own legal concerns in that district. All right, let's take a quick break. If you go join us on the Andy Fry YouTube live chat, you can vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Would you come say hi? We'd love to meet you. We'd love to see you there. The YouTube live chat poll is: when will you consume news the most? You think you've already met your peak before the election? Are you feeling it's right now after the election? Or when that inauguration sets in and Donald Trump is coming in and Joe Biden and whomever else is running the country? Oh yeah, Kamala Harris, she's there. Remember how irrelevant she was before she was running for office? It's kind of like right now. Thank God. YouTube live chat poll, go vote. We'll be right back. When we come. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Gosh, I can't get enough of that show or that song. In my YouTube algorithm, that it knows. And whenever I'm looking through YouTube to watch stuff with my kids, and the For King and Country Drummer Boy song comes up, I'm watching it every single time. Because the show is amazing, too. At least the one I've seen on YouTube.
I can't believe I've never seen it.
Oh, really?
I mean, I was working in Christian music when that show started. I still didn't go see it.
The Christmas one? Or
I think so, yeah.
How long have For King and Country been around?
They really started to hit in about 2013.
This song is so good.
I think I saw them in a winter jam, like very early in their careers. Mm-hmm. Then. Yeah. I mean, it had to have been, when I was in middle school, it's probably the last time I went to winter jam. Yeah. So it had to be pretty early then.
Is drums is their thing? Or is it just specifically in that song?
I think it's that song.
Okay.
And in that show.
Because it's massive.
yeah.
I love drums. I love drum lines. I love the movie Drum. Is it Drumline?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a movie called Drumline.
What's that guy's name in there? He's got like 30
Cannon.
Kids. Yeah. It's probably the best thing he's ever done.
I was going to say John Gunn.
Huh?
It was Nick Cannon.
I get those confused. I think that the Drummer Boy might be the most underrated Christmas song. The whole point, I've talked about this before, it might even be on the Christmas special that the Andy Fry Show will be doing on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Please consider this your personal invitation. I know it's like weird, you're going to have family over, it's Christmas, holidays, blah, blah, blah. Why would I have 97.1 on the radio? I don't need that on my holiday day. We don't broadcast our normal stuff on those days. We broadcast the Andy Fry Show Christmas special. And it is company for you in that holiday period of time, and I'm very proud of it. And we have been, that Christmas special is 8 years old, I think. I think the first time I got the keys to that opportunity was in 2016, when the Annie Fry Show became a thing in June, and by Christmas I was like, hey, can I do a Christmas special? And they were like, you want to take care of programming Christmas Day? Sure.
Yes, please.
And they are still just as thankful to this day as they were then.
But I love it.
It's one of the only reasons we still have a job here.
Yeah, that's just because we handle those 2 days when, air quotes, nobody is listening. but it is a really cool and special listening opportunity, and it can be background if you're kind of in between places or whatever, and you're in the car and you want to tune in. We'd love to have you. But we'll talk a lot about the Christmas hustle and bustle here on the show in the next, what is it, 19 days maybe till Christmas? 19 days.
Oh, geez.
And in the midst of that, yes, everybody in this room is a Christian. Anybody have a problem with that, Peter?
Nope. What?
Anybody, I was going to say, anyone want to deny? We're all Christians. We all consider...
Three times.
That's like way too long.
Yeah. It's a deep cut.
Yeah. I didn't think I'd have to explain it, but there I am. Yes, we are Christian people. Christmas, Jesus is the reason for the season. That is a legitimate thing that we all believe in this room. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I bring everybody into the room on that one. But when I listened to the Drummer Boy, it was during this Christmas special, putting it together in the last 8 years, that I actually listened to the words of the Drummer Boy, Little Drummer Boy. And I realized that the whole story of the Little Drummer Boy Christmas song is about a little kid who is going to meet his savior, and he's like, what could I possibly bring? Like, you can't meet that moment with the grandeur that you were going to behold. You can't walk into that moment and be like, all right, king, let me show you what I can do, and then be like kingly in the same way that your Lord and Savior is. But the Little Drummer Boy is all about a little kid who was blessed by God with the talent to play a drum. And then you realize the story of that is that he plays his drum for him. He plays his best for him. That if you are a God-fearing person, if you're not a God-fearing person, I want you to know that God has blessed you with those gifts. God has blessed us all with these gifts. And whatever that is, whatever your gift is, when you exemplify that gift at your highest level with your whole heart, you're actually glorifying the God who gave you that gift. And that is an incredible, humbling realization for me as a Christian, who I think is super simple to go through the motions as a Christian. I'm born and raised Christian. I think it's always very compelling to be around people who weren't born and raised Christian, because they have a fire for an understanding that maybe they didn't have before that. But it's really cool to think that God has blessed each and every one of us with different talents. And while it might not be preaching or like healing the sick or feeding the poor, that the talents that you have been given are gifts from God, and he wants you to use those talents to their greatest extent, and he loves you for them. I think that's a really cool story. And I did not think about it until I'm imagining a little boy with a drum. Just, you know, like how innocent and simple is that? You're not solving world hunger or achieving world peace through playing a drum. But if God gave you that gift and you're glorifying God when you use that gift, then maybe you are.
Yeah, there's a famous story about Eric Liddell, if you've ever heard his story. The movie Chariots of Fire was based on him. He was a runner in 1924, I think, at the Olympics, and he was not going to run. He was from a very religious Christian family, which is different than just saying a Christian family. They were like very strict, very, very strict family. And they were saying, well, if you want to serve God, you got to do it this way, Eric. And he just kept running. And obviously, he's very good at it, won an Olympic medal doing it. And the reason he said, my family kept telling me, if I'm going to serve God, I got to do it this way. And he said, but every time I ran, I felt God. So I just kept running. And it's an amazing story. It's been many years since I've seen that movie, but it exemplifies that, and the famous song that came from it and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really inspiring story, but I think it's basically the message you're sharing.
Yeah, it's the same concept. It's like when you think about, I think it's really important to amplify that message too. As you know, we're here, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a Christian, I'm a broadcaster, I'm a stubborn witch sometimes. There's a lot of things that I am. It depends on who I was when I met you. So there are people who are identifying more with some of those things than others. But I think it's really important when you are talking about yourself as a Christian, or if you are known to be a Christian, whether you're like talking about it all the time or not, if I were somebody, especially going through a holiday season, and you know the Jesus thing, it should get amplified a little bit more this time of year. Most secular understanding of what Christianity is is a measuring stick of what is right and what is wrong. Do you measure up or do you not? Do you fall short? Do you exceed the expectations? And therefore, thumbs up, you're a good Christian. And that's all bologna sausage. That's not what Christianity is, other than to say that the measuring stick is there for everybody and everybody falls short. So if in the idea of like, what does it mean to be a good Christian? It would be incredibly off-putting to not be in the Christian faith and to see all these Christians who show themselves to be better than everyone else because they're simply Christians. That is a bad Christian. that is somebody who is not showing you that they have been humbled in the knowledge that they are insufficient. Permanently, eternally insufficient. If there's not humility in yourself as a Christian person, you haven't fully understand and grasped the message of true grace. So in the holiday season, when we are, people go to church. It's almost church time again. You know, you get to do the Easter thing and then Christmas is coming and you go because grandma loves it when you're there, and she does. Or mom and dad love to see you sit there and you dress up and you do it because you love them. Maybe you're not all like in on the church thing, but you do it. It's almost as a gift to the people who think that it matters to you. That the minute that you realize that every single thing that you've done in your life that makes you feel, when you measure yourself up to people who are doing all of the things right in your mind, and you're like, I haven't done everything right. The second that you realize that you guys are on the same exact side of where that measuring stick ends, you're both on the losing side, and you are both scooped up and placed on the winning side through nothing of what you've done on your own, but through what God has done for you because he loves you, not because you did enough for him that he has now stamped your get out of jail free card, your pardon, so to speak. Once you realize that you've been scooped up just because he loves you that much and placed you on the side where you've got a ticket to eternal life with something that is perfect, that true understanding of something like that as a Christian, that true understanding of something like that is what makes you so humble, because you know that you don't deserve it. You didn't qualify. Nobody qualifies. You've been qualified by something else. If you've ever received, have you ever, I mean, we don't have to talk about it in detail because it's probably not for public air, but if you've ever known that you have blown it so bad, you've screwed up so bad, and somebody truly goes, I love you, I forgive you. And you're like, in your mind, you're going, I really blew this. I really screwed this up. You should not forgive me. There's going to be a point in time where you're going to have to kind of forgive yourself for what you did. But if you've ever been so humbled by somebody who's actually given you the true understanding of relief from the burden of knowing that you've messed up so bad, don't you love that person in a way that you can't even really describe? And don't you want to be kind to that person and kind to other people because of that person, because you realize that you have something that could only have been given to you, you could never qualify for it, because you've disqualified yourself? And when you've received that kind of forgiveness from a family member, from a parent, from a child, from a spouse, from an ex-spouse, from a friend, when you've received that type of, I forgive you, and you know that it's real, you feel like you could change the world with that type of relief.
Because you're grateful. And there's so much that just flows out of that gratitude.
And when you're grateful and it's coming out of you that way and you start doing good things because of it, it is a reaction to being qualified by something that can qualify you. Not because you're so good. Those good feelings and good emotions and everything, it comes after you've been made to be qualified. Not that you actually stamped your own passport. It doesn't work that way. And that's why I think that politics does weird things to the discussion of Christianity and faith, because people start trying to position. But they're trying to position it as people who have political capital to gain or to lose, which is a crap way to have that discussion.
And really, you're having a larger discussion about morality. I've seen that conversation oddly break out since Donald Trump was elected. You see a lot of people asking this question, and it's actually mostly from the left because they're trying to score points. Mm-hmm. But I like the discussion, actually. They're asking, well, what does it mean to be a Christian nation? Does it mean that we're turning away the immigrant and things? You know, these debate points that they're trying to make. There's a great debate to happen there because it's all about morality. What's mm-hmm. right, what's wrong, according to your Christian faith. The great thing is, if we start to have that conversation as a nation, I'm all for it. Because we all got to go back to exactly what you were just saying. If we're going to have the conversation about morality, it's got to start from personal relationship first and grow from there. If we have the same Savior, then we can start to have a conversation about right and wrong. And that's where it has to start, is that personal spot,
mm-hmm.
that relationship that you have. Then we can have the bigger discussion.
And the more you have that bigger discussion and that, the more, if you're honest with yourself, you realize you come to the same conclusion as everybody else, that I'm morally bankrupt. I've got nothing that I can look at and say, hey, I'm a really good person and you're a bad person. It doesn't work that way. Whenever you're honest with yourself, you figure out, oh, man, I fall short in this area, I fall short in this area, and I fall short in this area. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And that's where that humility that Annie's talking about comes in. You're bankrupt. You're spiritually bankrupt. And so you have to humble yourself. And that's when you have to ask for help.
I feel, well, and even if you don't ask for help, sometimes help shows up without you having to ask for it. It's not like a pre-qualification in order to receive the grace that is waiting for you. We talk about Christian faith probably more than most places do on the radio right now in news politics or whatever. And I don't ever want to shy away from it, but I also don't want to beat you over the head with it. I know you're not all Christians. I know you're sitting here right now and you're like, here she goes again. I get it. But I just want you to understand that we live in a world where everybody is really trying to cut out who they are and identify publicly. And I firmly believe that Christians have been made to be quiet for quite some time now, probably about 15 years or so, that it's been like, okay, you've had your time, you've had your millennia, you're going to sit down right now and we're going to let something else step up. And I'm here to say, I'm not telling anyone else to be quiet, but I'm also not going to sit down. Mm-hmm. And it's an important part of who we are. And if we're not going to talk about it during the Christmas season, when would we talk about it?
Yeah, we should talk about it more during the Christmas season and then the Easter season and maybe other seasons. We could probably find an excuse to talk about it. Independence Day season, Arbor Day.
Jesus, definitely Labor Day.
The reason for any season?
For really any season. Yeah, I'm trying to find it in Valentine's Day, but I can't find it there. But all the other ones.
You should look harder.
Okay.
When will you consume news the most? That's the YouTube live chat poll. Before the election, after the election, or around the inauguration. We'll be right back.
Shall I play for you? Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. What are your favorite holiday traditions that you haven't done yet or have done? We went to the Polar Express. I put a video up. You can see it on my socials. I think maybe the YouTube channel has the short up. And I love going on the Polar Express. My son, almost 15 in a couple weeks. If you've been listening to the show for any amount of time, and I'm telling you that my son is about to be 15, he's my oldest, that's probably making you feel old as well. But he was a train kid. Were your boys into trains? Were you into trains?
No, I never was. I would say not really them, but they were, man, were they into tractors and stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah, they love, if we drove by a tractor, they'd be like, tractor! Are you kidding me? Whoa,
that's funny.
Look at that thing.
Because still to this day, if we are driving anywhere and there's a train, everyone goes, train!
Really?
It's just like, you just got to say it out loud.
We do that with cows.
So do we.
Yeah.
Cows, any type of livestock that's easily, but mostly cows.
We get deer in our backyard too, so we do it with deer.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh yeah, you remember that.
And coon.
Yeah,
raccoons.
We're going to try to kill them now.
Yeah.
Eat them.
Brad, were you a train kid?
Not really train. Trucks. Big trucks.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Always?
Always.
The Polar Express, the point of me saying this is that when we go do the Polar Express, there's a nostalgia that is attached to my son, I can tell. He's very good about being big brother about it to his 3-year-old sister and his 8-year-old sister. But if you haven't gotten the opportunity to experience it, try to make it work, but go to Union Station and see the beauty that they have down there. Ride the Ferris wheel, go to the different things that they have. You don't have to ride the Polar Express. It's an expensive ticket. I will say it's worth it if you can swing it. But there are lots of things that you can do on an evening down at Union Station that are really, really fun to do in the holidays. The other thing that I like to do is the shrine. I like to go through the lights at the shrine.
That was one of ours too.
The have
shrine.
You done it?
No, not yet this year. We actually do that really close to Christmas because typically we do wonder lights earlier in the season and then we take a couple weeks.
Is that at Tillis?
No, that's the racetrack. At the racetrack.
I've never done that yet.
Gateway. Oh, it's so cool.
It's pretty cool. They have all the lights synced to different songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter where you are in the drive, because it kind of takes a little bit, all of what you're seeing is synced to the music. And you just turn it on your radio and you listen to the whole thing while you're watching.
You're basically driving the road course of the racetrack.
Are you racing people, Brad?
No, there's no room to pass.
You got to learn.
You're just getting really ragey.
There's a way to do it,
Move
though.
Over! You bump drafting.
Ho, ho, ho!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You bring a ramp.
Launch.
Just get out and jump over them.
Uh-huh.
They're like, well, is that part of the show?
Yep.
Anything else that's around town that, or like any areas that you try to prioritize or even
around
things that you
town,
do
man,
in I, your house?
Gosh, not. I haven't put out our outdoor decorations yet. You know why? Because A, it snowed on the weekend that I would usually do it.
Yeah.
And we were out of town for part of that weekend. And the leaves are still on the trees. Like, I don't want to put the stuff up until I can rake the leaves, but there's still so many leaves on the trees.
Now?
Now.
You can't put them out.
No, I can't.
Can we tune into this real quick?
Yeah.
Let's listen into Fox News. There's some Daniel Penny news. It says court dismisses Penny manslaughter charge. Let's listen to the report.
Count the most serious charge, second degree manslaughter. And he told jurors just moments ago that he said, quote, what that means is you are now free to consider count two. Whether that makes any difference, I have no idea. And then he sent jurors, now he's sending jurors home for the weekend and telling them they'll come back to deliberate the lesser charge, criminally negligent homicide, on Monday. So the trial is not yet done, but the latest here from the courthouse is that the judge has dismissed the most serious charge, second degree manslaughter, and now jurors will come back on Monday to deliberate the second charge, criminally negligent homicide. As you were talking about before the break, Martha, there was some back and forth, particularly from the defense, who had some concerns on whether jurors should be allowed to deliberate the lesser charge. Defense attorney Thomas Kenneth telling the judge he thought it might be coercive to jurors. It appears like he's trying to get all of this on record, all of this in the court record to possibly perhaps bring up an appeal in the future. But for now, this trial is not yet done, and Penny's fate is still not decided by the jurors here at the courthouse. I want to send things back over to you.
Well, that sounds like pretty big news.
Yeah, it's not over, but the biggest charge is dropped.
If you're Daniel Penny, you're going to feel a little bit better this weekend than you did this week.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, this is good because, you know, this is in New York. And still, they saw this as bogus. Mm-hmm. At least some of them did, because it's been dropped.
When we get to the other side of all of this, hopefully he's exonerated completely. He needs to get with a good writer. He needs to write a book, and we all need to buy it.
Yep.
Even if you don't read it, we should make this man rich.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he's a hero, why, mm-hmm. right? Is there any question in our minds here that his willingness to step in the moment of fear where people less capable than himself were in danger, that he answered the call and protected other people? I mean, that was why he did it.
That's exactly what he wasn't looking out for himself. In fact, if he was looking out for himself, he wouldn't have done it.
He would just sat there.
So yeah, that's heroic.
YouTube live chat poll for today. Ethan, you want to set it up for us? We'll answer it, then we'll get to the results.
Let's do it.
Winnie, how you doing over there?
Oh, she's chilling.
She's too loud.
Ethan advocated for me bringing the dog in on the air one time, and I texted him today. I'm like, were you serious? And he was like, you bring that dog in.
My day got so much better when you texted me this morning asking me.
Someone asked me.
Oh, the dog shook its ears.
Someone said, is Ethan's new job holding the dog? And if he can make it so, I'm sure that'd be fine with him.
Absolutely. It was very difficult getting work done the first hour that I was here.
Shh, don't say that.
And we're all
I mean, I was very productive today.
Yeah, the dog made you more productive.
Yeah. Maybe management's not listening today.
They're not.
They're not.
Today's YouTube live chat poll, when will you consume news most? Before the election, after, or around Inauguration Day?
Ryan, what do you say?
I say before the election, but close second is around inauguration.
Brad?
I'm an around the election or around the Inauguration Day because that's like when the season starts. Right now we're in the off season.
Who's he going to appoint?
Hot stove league.
Yeah. Who they sign? Who'd they get? Who did it? And then there's all the speculation. There's all the speculation about what your quote unquote team is going to be. And then inauguration day happens and then the games start. And we actually will get to see the results. We'll start seeing results. And that's what I'm most excited about. So I am inauguration day.
Ethan, what about you?
I don't know if I will ever be more involved than I was on election day and around that time. Yeah, I don't know if it ever gets that more crazy for me than it was during that.
I feel like it would be hard to beat before the election. And I don't know if this is just a position that I was in as covering it all the time. But there's a lot of new information. Like before, it was just like hoping. You were just trying to find more details that made you feel good about what was going to happen. New information will be coming in January. Let's get to the results.
Here are the results of today's YouTube live chat poll. 200 votes. We just got that 200th. When will you consume news the most? 44% say before the election. 34% say around the inauguration. And 21% now say after the election.
It's pretty close. A third of you are still saying it's coming up in January. We will be there to cover everything as it happens for you right here on 97.1. And we are really grateful for you. Don't go away. Mark Reardon is coming up next.